This is a true story.
The podcast you're about to hear was recorded in Wisconsin and New York in 2017.
At the request of the survivors, the names have been changed.
Out of respect for the dead, the rest has been told exactly as it occurred.
Welcome to the Better Call Fargo edition of the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the cheese to my nacho and the moy to my macho, it's Dan.
Good morning, Scott. Good evening from me.
I'm appreciative that you adopted a Hunt for Red October-esque Russian accent there.
Yes, comrade.
Like you're like you and Sean Connery kind of could have dueling questionable Russian accents. It was lovely and totally appropriate for this evening, I think. And also appropriate for what's going on in the world, quite frankly, or at least in this country.
True.
Oh, boy. Imagine we did a political podcast. we would have to get drunk before it, I think, at this point. But no, that's not what we're talking about. We are talking about two of our preferred shows most years, and at least mostly this year, Better Call Saul and Fargo. So, and we're actually recording the night of Fargo, which is unusual, but due to scheduling conflicts, this was the only way we could do this. So when we do get to that one, it may bear in mind, listeners, that we're talking about Fargo, at least in especially in your case, within minutes of having watched it. So
yeah,
that's going to be more of an immediate reaction thing. So, and any insights we come by on that one will be by pure chance and luck, I assume.
Yeah, Fargo isn't super deep this year, so I don't really think that, you know, for me, I haven't had a lot of stuff come to me like days later. It's like, oh, wow, what they were doing there is so brilliant. Oh, they really pulled that together. It just isn't happening, and I don't think it's going to happen this week either.
Yeah, I tend to agree, though I guess we should say that for the second half of the podcast, because I think we want to start off with the show that we have been enjoying an incredible amount this season. And, of course, I'm talking about Better Call Saul. Now, the title of this latest episode was Off Brand. Just so you know, it was written by Ann Cherkis, who also actually had a writing credit on the episode Rebecca last season. And it was directed by former actor turned magnificent TV director, I would say, Keith Gordon, who has directed episodes of series such as The Leftovers, Fargo, and Homeland, and a bunch of others. So, with this week's Better Call Saul, I'd say after a couple, I would say almost severely structured episodes. You know, you had the one that was cut directly in half, and then you had the next one, which was just purely focused on the Jimmy Chuck situation. This one, I would say, was a bit looser. A more negative person would say scattered or less focused, but I don't feel that myself. I think of it like more like a buffet-style episode. It gave us kind of a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a taste of this character, a dash of that one. And we definitely got a few, I would say, we got a few surprises, and we definitely got some forward progression, I think, not just for the season, but for the show itself.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I can see why people think the episode was a little bit less focused, but just because it was, you know, bouncing from scene to scene, and that, outwardly, there isn't tons of, like, you know, obvious connections between some of the stuff that's going on. But if you really think about what's been going on in the last couple weeks, I mean, it kind of feels like everything's naturally flowing from that. You know, we don't know exactly why Gus is doing what he's doing at this point, because there isn't exposition about it. But if we think about it, yeah, what Gus touring the laundry makes sense. What everybody's doing makes sense. And it just kind of, you know, I mean, yeah, it isn't just, like, quite as smooth, I guess. But you know, it didn't feel jarring to me or anything. It's like none of it felt out of place or out of like place for this season in particular.
Not at all. I mean, I did check some of the usual critical sites about the episode, and Sepinwall was as high on this one as he has been for all in the season. AV Club maybe knocked it down a grade, but they still seem to really like it. So I think also because very much with certain plot lines this week, some of it is laying groundwork or continuing stuff from this season, and some things like the Gus thing you mentioned, well, that's purely just fun stuff laying groundwork for Breaking Bad. It doesn't really have as much of an impact on what's going on this season, but it's more for the Breaking Bad fans, like, oh, look where he is. Look what he's doing. Look who he's meeting up with for the first time. Kind of cool.
Maybe. I'm not sure exactly how far they're going to go with some of this stuff, and maybe they are going to kind of, like, you know, really expand on it instead of it, you know, just being fan service for those of us that just, you know, want to see stuff in Breaking Bad.
Well, I don't see, I mean, for that aspect, I'm kind of jumping to where I wasn't planning to jump, but we'll just do it anyway, because who cares? I would actually confess, I think I would feel that was more fan service than anything else. There's not really going to be that much to do there, because unless we discover, oh my God, they could go that route. I forgot about
it. Yeah.
I totally forgot about a certain other character. Oh gosh, if he shows up, that'll be great. Okay,
I know.
I didn't want to start off with one of the most smallest things in the episode, but what the hell? We'll talk about it now. Yeah, I forgot because I started to say, well, the whole super lab was. I was just thinking about it being Walt's super lab, but I forgot that there was someone else working down there before Walt got there, and maybe that was kind of being planned ahead of time. Although this is still years before Breaking Bad, and I never got the impression that person was working for Gus for years there. So, but maybe again, I think it's just laying the groundwork for that.
Yeah, if they don't do anything, and this is just fan service, that's fine. But it does kind of make me excited where there's like potential that this show can do some interesting things that I really wasn't expecting. I mean, I don't really give a crap if we. It's not necessary that I see any Breaking Bad anything. I like what they're doing with the Jimmy stuff, enough where it doesn't have to be done. But also when I see, you know, various characters show up that I wasn't expecting to see, and then realizing that there's stuff they can do with these characters that can be really, like, awesome and interesting, I'm just like, you know, hell yeah. I don't need this Breaking Bad stuff, but if they're going to do it, it's going to be awesome, so they may as well just fucking do it.
But it's going to be unavoidable, because if you're going to follow Mike's storyline, Mike works for Gus. So there's not going to be a way around it. There's a reason why you had to bring in Gus Fring,
because right.
You know that you can't just suddenly have him pop up at, you know, the last episode or something. But seeing Lydia, that was kind of the big surprise in the episode.
Yeah, I was already happy that we saw Tyrus and that other dude. I don't remember what the name of the other guy was, but I remember seeing him back in the day on the show. The guy that was with him and Victor and Nacho in that one scene.
Right, yes.
But then when I saw her, I'm just like, oh, you know, that's pretty cool. You know, it makes sense, it's not like it was a character I was totally in love with, but it is, you know, does leave the possibility for some, you know, shit.
I really dug her character because she was just different. And this is the first time we've seen her with Gus Fring, because we knew that that there was a working relationship there that we heard about, you know, years later, but we never knew that they actually met each other. So, and the fact that she had a hand in, you know, helping him, you know, find that the big laundry industrial plant or whatever you call that thing, that's eventually going to be a cover for his super meth lab is kind of interesting. Because right now, as far as we've seen, Gus isn't even involved in that drug. I mean, everything they're doing they're not dealing with meth at this point. You know, it's all coke, I guess. But the thing that really struck me about this episode, and why I was originally going to like skip Jimmy, Mike, Chuck, Gus, and all of them, I kind of thought a big focus of this episode was a character who's been here since the beginning of the series, but we hadn't really gotten much time with him. Nacho.
Yeah.
I mean, Michael Mando really got a lot of screen time and a lot of major character development and so on in this episode. And it makes him a very, I always thought he was an interesting character to begin with, but not only did it make him even more interesting, it also kind of threw a monkey wrench in everyone's weekly changing theories about what eventually happens to Hector.
Oh yeah, well yeah. I mean, well, you know, just because of the way the show has evolved, there hasn't been very much Nacho, you know, at all. But now they're at a point now where they have him positioned on the show. I mean, things are kind of swirling around him to the thing where, like, you know, he does have the potential to play some kind of linchpin in whatever is going to go on here, and he's kind of boxed in by the situation. So he's, you know, likely to do something pretty interesting at some point soonish here, which
Yeah,
that should be nice to see.
it definitely looks like he's going to be playing a major part here based on Hector wanting him to tell his father that now they're gonna be a front for helping him to ship drugs over the border. And as we see, that's not something Nacho wants to do. That moment when he's with the sewing machine and he actually like it goes through his hand, and I. If I remember correctly, he really doesn't even react to it, because
No.
I know I'd be crying like a baby. Yeah, and then of course that pill, which one has to imagine, because I guess that's like heart medication or something along those lines. So one can guess that maybe somehow that might be, unless it's yet another red herring, but it feels like that might be something that leads to what eventually happens to Hector. Although, again, you never know. They could just be throwing a lot of things at us, and then it turns out to be something else entirely. That wouldn't be, I wouldn't put that past the likes of Gilligan and Gould,
No.
you know, overall.
No, I mean, it could be something where, you know, they're just, you know, they can use this to find information out and see, like, you know, what exactly Hector's issue is, and then you know, do something else that'll, like, trigger some kind of event. Or, you know, they could try to do that and the whole thing will go south, and then, you know, the situation will escalate in some crazy way we can't imagine at this point.
Right. And I think the interesting thing to wonder about sometimes with Hector is, and I don't remember if, I can't even remember if we discussed this on a podcast or I was just having a conversation with someone outside of the podcast, which is entirely possible, that in some ways the mystery with Hector may not be so much how he ends up in the wheelchair, because now it's just, well, it's either going to be, well, we are still assuming it's not going to be a natural cause of situation, though you never know. But it could be somehow connected to either Gus or Mike, or now Nacho seems to be the leading candidate because the threat to his father's livelihood and such. What I'm wondering more about is how Hector ends up just in that shack with Tuco, like clearly not being taken care of or cared for the way
Yeah.
you'd expect a Don would be. So if there was some sort of falling out or situation with Don Eladio or whatever, we don't know. So I am very curious about how that plays out. So not just about his health, but how he ends up in the situation he's in. They were very sly, if I'm remembering the episode right now, by mentioning Tuco getting into some trouble while he was in prison. I figured that's just so we don't have to worry about having that character pop up anytime soon, because
Yeah.
storyline and probably the actor might be busy, who knows. But I like that they put that in there, because Tuco does strike me as someone who's not going to be a good boy in prison. So, although I'd like to have a clip of him, I'd like to see him in prison just once, just in like getting into like a fight in the weight room or something like that. So shifting over to Chuck, what did you think of that sequence of him going out into the, I guess, into the city? Is that the right way to phrase it?
Yeah, going into downtown Albuquerque and going out and about doing his thing. I'm not really sure what he's doing, you know, what his end game is there, but I did find it pretty, you know, it was just, I mean, it was shot so well, that which helped. But even though, you know, not always a fan of what Chuck's doing, I'm at the same whole, you know, token when I'm watching him, just like, you know, I do kind of want to see, like, what happens when he gets better, or if he has the ability to get better. So I'm kind of, you know, rooting to see him, you know, get his shit together a little bit and just see what happens, even though it won't necessarily be helpful for our heroes.
We're still fascinated by the character, and whether we view him as victim or villain, you still want to see what he does. It seemed like he was almost trying to prepare himself or vaccinate himself, almost like when he was like holding the battery and the way he and going out to maybe to help prepare himself.
So, yeah, it was like aversion therapy.
Right, doing right. And I would see, and it was funny because initially, when we first saw that in the episode, I was thinking, oh, maybe it's finally gotten through to him that this is just a mental thing, and he's trying to wean himself off his way of thinking. But then when he goes into downtown Albuquerque, which eventually leads to him calling Dr. Cruz, and Dr. Cruz is the name of the Clea DuVall character you had mentioned, who we'd seen two times before on the show. I'm starting to wonder if, does Chuck have another scheme in mind? Because it seems like this is, I mean, he's gone to greater lengths than normal, putting himself in the extreme discomfort to do something. I wish I could come up with a good theory what he's up to here.
If he's calling the doctor, and I guess there is some like doctor-patient confidentiality with like certain things, but as to why he like is going like halfway across town and using a payphone to make the phone call, I don't have any explanation for that at all yet, which is fine.
Yeah, no, I like not knowing and trying to. It's cool when we can come up with some theories and theorize for stuff, and we can do that on this podcast. I have a few ready for our podcast we'll do tomorrow night for some other shows. But nice. This one, I'm like, okay, I'm not quite sure, and I like not being sure. Because, Chuck's a smart character. I shouldn't be that far ahead of him anyway. So,
Speaking of Chuck, I did think it was interesting because I really hadn't seen it from this perspective before, but when Rebecca and Jimmy are having their confrontation and she points out that like, Chuck has a mental illness, so like, don't be like super shitty with him because, he might need your like help here. I'm just like, oh yeah. I mean, like he actually does have like a mental illness. He's not just like a total bastard. So, they probably should take that into account when considering his actions, which I, really wasn't doing. I suppose for the most part, we were kind of like, taking his electromagnetic thing is like, kind of an actual thing instead of a mental thing, even though we know better. Just right. Kind of like, the way they shoot the show really reinforces that.
Yes.
So then like now we've kind of just like seen it in a different way. And now it's just, yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those interesting ways to try to rationalize Chuck when she says that. And if I'd been in that room, I would have said, how many serial killers are therefore suffering from a mental illness doesn't mean I'm going to be feeling bad for them either. I don't want to say I was proud of Jimmy, but the fact that he did remain steadfast because, at a certain point, enough is enough. And as we heard Kim underscoring in the opening of the episode, when she was talking about the years of Jimmy, pretty much being at Chuck's beck and call, as a caretaker or caregiver or an errand boy or whatever you want to call it. I mean, or everything combined. It feels like he's already sacrificed, a lot to try to help his brother. Whereas his brother, I wouldn't say he's done the same for Jimmy. Other than getting him bailing him out of jail, and so he wouldn't end up going to prison or whatever that whole situation was for the defecating to the sunroof thing.
No, I mean, I definitely think that, the relationship is pretty one-sided, but I mean, Jimmy does have some responsibility for what's going on here. Like, if Chuck's mental thing is getting worse and worse, I mean, Jimmy has known since season one that Chuck's issue is mental, not physiological, and could have had him committed. He chose not to for, whatever, whether or not you think the reasons were good or whatever, but he definitely did play a role in this situation escalating. So,
yeah, that's true.
Not that I'm, defending Chuck or anything, because he's definitely done some douchey stuff, but it is, the more I think about it, the more complicated it is for me to, it's not very black and white.
No. Well, speaking of family, we also get a little bit of family time with Mike in this episode. He joins his daughter-in-law, Stacy, at that grief survivor support group thing. There's an interesting moment when she reminds him of a story that his son, her dead husband, I guess, told her about how he built, I think it was like a carport or something at home when he was a kid. And Mike seems to have no memory of it. So I was wondering, you know, Mike doesn't seem like the kind of person who'd forget things. So you wonder if it was an odd story the son told just to kind of build up his dad or something, make him sound that much more impressive. Or maybe Mike has forgotten. I guess it is possible, but it just doesn't seem like someone would forget something like that, especially, you know, if there were like any, in any way, like good memories about his family life.
I kind of took it more as like she was just kind of like bullshitting him a little bit, trying to like, you know, manipulate him and use him, just based on the fact that like carports are more of like a desert climate thing than like a Philadelphia area where it's like a wet climate thing where the people tend to have garages. Carports are much, much more common in like the areas that are dry. You can just park your car out and just kind of park
in the sun. But she's not a native from that area where that phrase would come easily to her anyway. So I don't know if I would put any weight on that. Although you have to wonder if he's, because she's volunteered him to, I guess, build a new playground, but it's a playground for the church. So it's not the one that we'll see his granddaughter playing in years from now, which actually kind of would have been cool if they could have figured out a way to make those two go together. But it seems like a very deliberate detail to put into the storyline. So you wonder if maybe someone's going to end up in the concrete mix at some point, you know, on this playground. Yeah. You start trying to figure out. But then that's where the Breaking Bad situation comes into play, because you realize, okay, well, it can't be characters X, Y, and Z, because we know we see them years later. So, you know, who's left, that kind of thing. No one that comes to mind right now, at least. Wow, we actually went through a lot there. I guess the big thing we haven't gotten to is, well, I was going to say Kim a little bit, but more Jimmy. And, you know, but Kim, she does get him off with a year suspension rather than losing his license. But then we have this whole situation of what is he going to do now? and in this episode, the whole thing where he still had 9 commercials left to air on the local TV station, which were paid for, or going to be paid for. So he comes up with a scheme, or actually that assistant puts the idea in his head to make a commercial to sell his commercial time. That's essentially what happened, right?
Yeah.
And that's how we get Saul Goodman. And once again, and again, this is from myself, and I know at least a handful of our listeners definitely are fans of the show, Mr. Show, with Bob and David. Just like all the other Better Call Saul commercials always were, they look like something that was straight out of Mr. Show, and this was no different. I mean, the sunglasses and the beard and the hat and everything. It was ridiculous, but like spot on. I mean, it made perfect sense for what he was doing. I enjoy that so much. I didn't rewind any part of the episode back except for that commercial. I just watched it again because it made me smile. You know, all the wipes he said and stuff.
Yeah, I was watching with my parents, and we all really enjoyed that that scene. You know, for just because, you know, not for the same reasons as that, but it was a lot of fun.
Right, and like we were saying last week, I mean, Jimmy is someone who, you know, if he couldn't practice law, he'd be a salesman, because he's a total huckster. You know, whether it be, he could be a used car salesman, he could be a TV spokesperson. I mean, just from this, putting silly outfits aside, you know, that's where his skill set really could be. I am wondering, though, and I will admit up front, because I don't like to crib from other people's thoughts, but the thought occurred to me, and then I did read Sepinwall's column about this specific episode, and I think he mentions it in there. So I'm going to rip him off right now. If he's not going to be a lawyer for 12 months, do you think we're going to get a time jump in this show? Because it'd be kind of weird to go like that long a stretch of time on this show without him practicing law of any kind. Especially when you consider that not that much time has passed in, you know, the first 2.5 seasons already. But I wonder if they're going to do a time jump or not on the show. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, there is stuff going on with the other characters. So, I mean, I suppose you don't really have to show, like, you know, Kim working on Mesa Verde shit, or like, you know, Chuck progressively getting better. I suppose they could do a time jump. I would prefer they don't. I just would like to see, you know, just whatever.
Jimmy finding a way to occupy his time for a year.
Make it a bunch of goofy commercials or whatever. I'd be more than fine with that.
But that would, well, considering how much time each season has taken, that would be the rest of the show, I think. Because, again, not that much time has passed in these couple seasons. I haven't done my homework on this yet, so forgive me there, out there. I'm pretty sure we're only talking about a few months right now. I don't think it's been hasn't been years on the show yet, especially when the seasons tend to pick up one right after the other. So 12 months is already longer than we had on the show. That's what I mean. Like, you know, we're not going to have like three more seasons of Jimmy not practicing law. I mean, what's the show going to be? You know, so that's why I tend to think they will have to do that in some way. Of course, who knows. But they've done it before. They did it on Breaking Bad. They did a time jump, so it wouldn't shock me if they did a time jump as well here.
If they do one, I would think I would prefer they, you know, just fiddle around with some other stuff over the next couple episodes, and then do one like at the end of the season. You know, kind of like they did with BSG, where they do a time jump, and then like, you know, they can spend a little time filling in the blanks after that. You know what happened during that year, because I kind of like. Enjoy when they do that somewhat. Just, you know, show you some stuff in the future, and you don't quite understand, like, you know, what they're referring to, and then, you know, eventually you do. If they're going to do a time jump, I'd prefer it to be something like that. But well, I guess we will see.
We'll see. I mean, we are fans of enough other shows that have done excellent time jumps, and we didn't have issue one with them. You know, either be every single season of Mad Men, which every season had a time jump, or first season of Fargo has a sudden massive time jump, which we loved. So I think, especially when you have people like Vince Gilligan involved and Gould, I ultimately will trust they, as you always like to say, that they know what they're doing, and they have and like the Cylons, they have a plan. So I'm just curious about it, but I have no way of guessing. I mean, we could have Jimmy just be Jimmy sitting around the house not doing anything for the rest of the season, which would be kind of bizarre. Or maybe they'll do one sooner, or maybe he'll get involved in an entirely different activity that I'm just not thinking of, and they'll come up with something, be like, oh wow, he is going to be a salesman for the rest of the year or something. How exciting that'll be to watch over the course of a couple seasons, I don't know, but we'll see. I did feel it needed to be addressed, because it's something that they're going to have to deal with one way or the other. We're just curious to see how they handle it eventually. And by the way, I loved Kim's reaction at the very end of the episode, which is, if I recall, is just her going, huh. That's such a perfect ending. I was like, kudos to whoever came up with that one. Okay, I feel we've covered that one enough. I think we can move on to the next one.
Yep.
All right, and the next one, of course, just aired just a little while ago, would be Fargo. The title of the latest episode of Fargo was The House of Special Purpose. It was written by Robert DeLaurentis, who had written two previous Fargo episodes from last season, Lop Lop and the Myth of Sisyphus, which is murder on my list, and directed by Dearbla. This person's name is spelled Dearbhla. So I'm going Dearbla. Walsh, who has helmed episodes of series such as Shameless, The Tudors, and Penny Dreadful. Now, that title, The House of Special Purpose, now, they either took it from the history books, which goes all the way back to 19th century Russia, early 20th century, or a novel of the same title that was a fictional work that was sort of kind of inspired by that, but not quite. I'm going to go with history for the definition here, and it's actually kind of fascinating. The House of Special Purpose was actually the Iptiev House. It was a merchant's house in Yekaterinburg, is Russia, where the former Emperor Nicholas II of Russia, his family, and members of his household were all executed following the Bolshevik Revolution. Now, before the Romanovs moved into the house, because they moved in 1918, the place had first been built in the late 19th century by a mining official, and then it got passed on to some gold dealer of tainted reputation, and then later it was acquired by a military engineer, who was then, years later, he was ordered to vacate the house for the royal family and their entire household, which then led to one of the bloodiest and messiest massacres of all time. It said that it took, you know, anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes to repeatedly shoot and kill all 11 members of the family and all their servants and workers for them. So that's an interesting thing to name the episode. Now, though what's interesting, after having watched the episode, I can kind of see how it can work in different analogies. From how Emmett's house is totally torn apart by the viewing of that sex tape, and he, you know, loses, at least in the moment, he's lost his family, or, you know, some rather brutal things that happen in the episode later on as well, which might go along with this. So, before we get, what did you think of this one? I mean, this was, there's a lot I liked about it, but I feel like I still have an overriding issue with it. What did you think of it before we go into anything specific?
It definitely feels like they are, you know, I don't know, like, the show's not bad, but every episode feels like they're moving, like, the pieces into place for something bigger, and it just isn't happening yet. I mean, I'm not, like, super impatient. I think there's been 5 episodes now, but I don't know. It's just, you know, it's not like nothing is happening, but it's just like they're doing a lot of buildup and just they're not really paying it off. I mean, they're, you know, they're doing some stuff that's interesting and seeing some, you know, fun, quirky scenes that are shot well. But for the most part, it's just kind of, you know, just not happening.
Okay. I wonder if you might be a degree or two more negative than me. I'm not sure. Let me see. Because my feeling about it is, there's definitely stuff happening. I mean, a lot of stuff happened in the episode. And there were certainly escalations in a number of storylines. I think for me, it's everything feels a bit more, how do I put this? Things just feel a bit more obvious to me than they did, like, in the first 2 seasons. Like, I can kind of see where, you know, it's like, oh, it's all a bunch of misunderstandings and coincidences and whatever, and they keep hitting certain points home repeatedly in all the episodes, especially when it comes to the matter of truth, which again is talked about a few times in this episode. I mean, for some reason this season they keep wanting to go back to the well of talking about what is truth and what is a true story. I'm wondering if at the end of this we'll find out this is all just, you know, someone with a big storybook on their lap, like, you know, Grandpa and Princess Bride or something. Like, oh, everything's been bullshit. So there's a lot of, I mean, there's definitely things I like, but it just, it feels, to a degree, it feels like someone's trying to do a version of Fargo rather than this being Fargo for me, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I could see that.
And again, I'm really, that doesn't mean I'm not enjoying it. It's just not at the level I enjoyed the first 2 seasons, you know.
No, it's watered down.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously, as you know, I mean, I think the first 2 seasons were excellent. I thought they could do no wrong. This, I feel a drift between good, but occasionally very good. I mean, there's definitely moments in this episode that are definitely memorable and worthwhile. It's just the overall story. I was talking about it with my friends the other day, and I wanted to disagree with them because I tend to, and they're listening, so they know who I'm talking about. But I can't. And you keep going back to the very first episode. It's like, so why couldn't they have gone to the authorities right off the bat? Because you never really clarified that. never really made that clear. Yeah, now it's too late. Now I get it being, it's like they've, well, even now, maybe it's not too late, I don't know. But that's, I think that's a shaky foundation to build the whole Emmett Stussy and Vargas storyline on, you know? Because it always seemed from the get-go, they couldn't have gone to the authorities, like, you know, day one. I don't get why they didn't do that. They didn't seem to have the leverage that they maybe do now. Even now, it's a little iffy. But, so let's get into the episode a little bit. So we start off with the whole thing with the whole sex tape, the blackmail scheme, which that kind of goes to what I'm talking about. On one hand, it's, you know, it's fun, it's hysterical, it's silly, whatever. But part of me was thinking, Nikki, maybe not so much Ray, but Nikki, she seems like she's fairly smart, although she kind of was a bonehead about the whole making the assumption about the stamp in the deposit box thing, so maybe I'm giving her too much credit. But how could they think that would work? That seemed like a really bad scheme to me, you know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it just doesn't really make sense the more you think about it. Because, I mean, obviously, I don't know. One would assume that if Emmett had got the file first, which they were, you know, I guess planning on, then, you know, he could have just explained, like, you know, hey, wife, I have a twin brother. Look what this douchebag did. You know, he just, you know, go see him. He doesn't have a mustache anymore. Blah, blah, blah. It would be easily explained.
Yeah, it's a bad blackmail scheme for that reason right off the top. It's also, you don't drop it off on their porch. You drop it off where he works. You wouldn't want there to be a risk of the wife opening it, because then your whole scheme is blown anyway. That also just didn't make any sense to me. There were so many things about it that were just like, all right, these are just like two really dumb people trying to come up with a blackmail scheme. Kind of made me think of that movie Ruthless People, where, you know, everyone's a fucking moron and we're trying to do all these, you know, black schemes and all these other things, whatever. But then we do get the Cy and Vargas scene, which is memorable, I guess. We learned that Vargas is an anti-Semite, so that's yet a new wrinkle for that character that I didn't see coming. Don't know how I felt about that, but okay. So I've mentioned before that menstruation seemed to be a running thing this season. So apparently urination is also, because didn't we get like a urine test montage in one of the early episodes, like the first or second episode, if I'm not mistaken?
Oh yeah.
So, and now we have this. And apparently there must not be a lot of sugar in Vargas's diet, or maybe because he throws it all up or something, since his urine is less yellow and more and closer to clear. The more sugar in your diet, the more yellow your pee can be, if I remember my biology.
Or if you're less hydrated.
Oh really?
If you're hydrated, it tends to be pretty clear. But if you're
right. You're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Oh, maybe Vargas just drinks a lot of water. Maybe it's to wash down all the. Oh wait, he doesn't have to wash anything down. So one of the things they seem to be setting up. Well, they didn't just seem to be setting up. One of the things throughout this episode is Vargas being suspicious of Cy, which I guess all comes from him seeing that cop. In the previous episode, Winnie, and the lengths he goes to here. Now, one of the things I love about this season is Cy Feltz. He's definitely one of my favorite characters on the show. So I got a huge kick out of those scenes, even though, and I was feeling uncomfortable for him, and I kept thinking, no one ever walks by this office outside. You've got all that glass, and no one ever sees what's going on. But how did you feel about that scene and lines like his wife being a sensualist who there's no difference between a pastrami sandwich or a dick in her mouth? Anyway,
yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna. That's a yearbook quote right there.
Yeah, I don't got much to add to that.
All right, so I thought what might have caught your eye was when Sai goes to, for whatever reason, at this point, again, people making bad decisions or bad plans without really thinking them out. Sai goes to see that the Widow Goldfarb. So I didn't know this actress was going to be on the show. I had no idea. So I thought that might have caught your eye since you know her best from Battlestar Galactica.
Oh yeah, that's sweet.
So we got Mary McDonnell, who then I had to remember. You know what? Never mind. Boss, like, oh, she's actually been nominated for the Oscar twice. I kind of forget about that because it was so long ago in her career. So I'm kind of perplexed because he's thinking that maybe they can still try to sell the whole kit and caboodle to her while this is going on. How can he possibly think that would work? I mean, it's fun to watch, but in my mind, you know, the logic part starts to kick in. It's like, how would you think that would possibly work? They're going to kill you. How do you not see that? So I want to say Sai's smarter than that, but we've also seen that Sai's not a fucking genius either, quite frankly. But he's just so much fun to watch on this. So and we actually get a lot of scenes with him now that I think about it, because he gets to interact with a lot of people. You know, obviously that whole scene with him and Emmett, where Emmett has one of the more profound lines in the episode, where he just says, "What is the point of you?" And they're talking at cross purposes, because he, you know, Emmett's all talking about his brother while Sai is all talking about Vargas. I note that he doesn't mention that he was forced to drink urine, but I was very much in enjoying how that whole thing worked out. I was a little confused though, because his whole thing is that he wants to be set free to do whatever he wants without having to worry about you know Emmett, you know, holding him back. But then he finally arranges to meet with Nikki, which I love that, because I've been wanting to see those two characters, you know, bounce off each other. So that was pretty cool. Offering her money is your way of letting the shackles free. That was because I thought it was like, oh, Sai's gonna man up and do, like, just gonna offer her less money. That's it. $40,000 is still a sizable chunk of money. It's not what they wanted, but whatever. And which leads to what's the Russian guy's name? I forgot. Mimo and Yuri. It's Yuri, right? Who seems to get unexpected amounts of dialogue in the show. I always forget that he even talks, and then when he talks, he goes on forever about, you know, Russia or Siberia, and you still wonder about the link to the whole East Berlin thing from that 1988 flashback we got in the opening of the season. Did you think they killed her initially when they did that?
No, I figured she was still alive. I figured that she was going to be more roughed up than she appeared to be, or, you know, than she ended up looking, but I figured she was still alive.
See, I thought in the moment they just killed her, because I have the subtitles on, because I'm, you know, my ears are bad. And they mentioned, like, screaming stops, and then, you know, punching continues. So I thought, oh. And then I was going by Sai's expression, because Sai's expression was the one of total horror. And I figured, and also why they're not showing it to us, because she's, you know, this big bloody mess. And I was like, oh, I can't believe they got rid of, like, one of the major characters who's really kind of a driving force on the show. But, you know, it's a shocker. Well, why not do that? And then when she turned out to be alive, like, oh, okay. Oh, she's still barely alive, I guess. And then when she got into the car, I was like, wait, her face looks fine. Did they not even touch her face? Because I didn't see, like, any blood or bruises on her face at all. It's not until we see her in the bathtub later on, and we see that they beat her side repeatedly or whatever. Which, again, it's still it's a horrible, horrible thing, and I'm glad they didn't kill off the character, but it's just, it's not what I expected. Although, since it seems really clear what they're doing as far as the pieces are moving, it does make more sense for her to still be alive, because as far as she knows, these two guys were with Sai. That's her perspective. So now, the whole thing about Rey is probably going to be out for revenge, because he's going to think his brother had his girlfriend, you know, nearly beaten to death or something. I mean, I have to, at least, maybe I should give them some credit. I do like the fact that every single thing we're seeing is someone mistaking something for something else, and what they believe. And I guess that goes to the whole idea of there being, you know, different truths for people. So it's like everyone believes a totally different story from what they're seeing, and only the viewers can see what's really going on, I guess, on the show. And then we had a long period of silence.
Yeah.
See, the danger of recording late at night.
Yeah. No, I'm just trying to think of something to add, and I think you've got it covered pretty well. You know, it's nice to see, Sai's an interesting character, so it's nice to see, a good amount of him. They're not really using Gary Kuhn enough, unfortunately, and I don't know. I mean, you know, they continue to, like, you know, make just escalate the situation slowly, but for me, it's just fallen flat. Like, there's, like, no way the show is going to end up in, like, my top five for the season at this point. I can't imagine any way they're going to make it, maybe they're just saving it for the back half. I don't know.
Well, it feels like to me also, to go along with that, that you almost in an episode like this, you end up minimizing Cary Coon's character's involvement because, you know, she's already on to stuff. So if you start using her more, a lot of this is going to get wrapped up a lot sooner. So in a way, you just, like, you limit the amount of time with her in an episode like this. And then you have to have the chief being an obstacle. I'll give that character the credit this time. Although I found him really annoying in the previous episode, and it's not that he wasn't this episode, but at least I understood him a little bit better, and he told a better story. I mean, his story about the girl in the red balloon in England was much more, I found a lot more interesting than him talking about, you know, the boys in the war and all that crap. So, and he did have a point, like, he went to the classic thing, like, you're doing all this and you don't have proof. You know, and I like that he actually had a story at the ready to how coincidences actually do happen sometimes. Some people say there's no such thing as a coincidence. He's of the mindset, yes, there is. So, but of course she's going to go off and do her own thing anyway, I'm sure. But I at least didn't hate the moment with him this episode the way I did last week. So I'll give that.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, it's not a terrible show, but I'm just, you know, I think it might be telling that, like, the moment I enjoyed most this week was, like, seeing the interrogator from Legion, like, showing up as an IRS agent dude. So if that was, like, the thing I took most pleasure of, well, I guess that probably means I like Legion a lot more than I like this, and I do.
Well, yeah, Legion was amazing, and I can't wait for that to come back. I was thrilled to see that actor back. I forget his name. He's got he's one of those guys that has a really interesting name too. I'll remember for next week. And it was interesting because I was thinking, oh, it's yet another bit of confusion here. I was worried a little bit for Emmett because of what happened to Sai when they saw a cop show up. But at least this time, Vargas understood that this wasn't his fault. I did like his first reaction was, did you see if he had a wedding ring? Does he have kids? Because the first way to solve the problem is just kill him, like they killed their lawyer that time. So, yeah, I'll just say I'm enjoying it, but it's not at the level of the other two seasons. Where it'll show up, whether it'll be in my 5 or 10, well, I do 10 usually. It'll be in my 10 at the end of the year. I'll wait and see how the rest of the year goes by, but I can already think of several shows I've watched already, including Better Call Saul, which I would pop ahead of this. That doesn't mean they might not still have some great episodes in store for us. I mean, I'm not gonna assume it's gonna be, you know, crap, but it's a, you know what, maybe it's a B or B plus at best, you know.
I enjoy watching it. It's fun. It's got cool music. I like, you know, pretty much everybody on the screen. I don't know. I'm just not feeling it. But I'm really feeling Saul, so that more than makes up for it.
I agree. All right, well, it feels like we should bring it to a close here then. And as I'm literally closing my book of scribble down notes here, just close it. There we go. Wow. It's like the old timey radio shows where I do like sound effects and stuff. Here I am lighting a match. Shit, anyway. So what say I wrap this up?
Yep.
Okay, then. If you enjoy this podcast, I hope you did. You might enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. You type that in, like the page, and join the conversation about shows like Fargo, Better Call Saul, and many others. You can also find us on iTunes the very same way. Type in the Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. And finally, you can also follow us on the Twitter. Our handle there is POTUS. No, it's not that. It's at STVD Podcast. That's STVD as in Serious TV Drama. We will be recording our usual superhero silliness, I think, tomorrow night. And Dan and I will be back next week, hopefully, to do the next installment of our Better Call Fargo podcast covering these two. Well, one good, one great show.
Yep.
All right. Well, with that said, thanks for being able to pull this thing together tonight, as always. And so good night to you, Dan, and good night to everyone out there.
Good night, comrades.